Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Behind Our Eyes book launch program for April 13th, 2023. This evening, we will hear from poet and artist Linda McKinney Lambert. This is Annie, your host, and we have Abby Geller, who is my co-host. Okay, Carol, take it away.
Hello. Greetings to BOE members and guests. This is Carol Farnsworth. I am the Vice President of Behind Our Eyes and your host for this evening. We have pleasure to have Linda Lambert, a poet, artist, and essay person extraordinaire. And she will be talking to us about her new book, Songs for the Pilgrimage. It is a 33-year work in progress, as she said, because the journey or the pilgrimage continues. This is a little different this evening because there are five presenters and they will be doing different sections of Linda's book. The five sections will be done by two men and two women so that we have a variety of voices to hear. After the last presenter, which is Linda, we will have it open for questions. At the end, Linda will be doing a comment to end the show. With that, Linda, welcome. And what would you like to tell us about your book?
Thank you so much, Carol. It's such a pleasure to be here. And I want to thank everybody who has come to hear the program. I'm super excited. And I want to thank you, Carol, for leading me through this process, too. I want to thank the readers that are going to be reading. And that's kind of a secret, sort of, until they start to read. And Carol will be introducing them. I think that the first thing I need to say is what my mission statement is for writing, because it took me a long time to be able to put into just a few words what I do. You know how that is. It's hard to distill things down. But as poets, we do that all the time. And it does come naturally to us. My mission statement is that I reveal what is forgotten, things that are lost, and things that are invisible. That's basically what I do in a nutshell. My driving passion in life has been art for quite a few years. And my background is in art. So it only is natural that when I come to writing, I'm coming to writing through that lens of being an artist. I wanted first to tell you just a little bit about my background. I married my husband when I was 17 years old and he was 20. And tomorrow it will mark 62 years of our marriage. My husband's name is Bob and we have five children. And we live in a small village in western Pennsylvania. And everybody always hears me say, I'm from the village of Wurttemberg in western Pennsylvania. Our life was just a very normal life, like most people our age at the time. Our life centered around community service. Bob was always involved with JCs. I was a junior woman. And our church, of course. So between community things and our church and in raising the children together, we had a really busy life. I began making art at the ripe old age of 36 years old. It wasn't anything I was very familiar with at all, but a friend from church was an artist. And one day when she was at my house and we were planning a session for our jet cadet troop, she made a comment to me after she looked around in my house and, you know, was in the house for a while. And she said, you're an artist. I really didn't even know what that meant. And I said to her, well, I would like to take art classes, but I kind of would like to go with somebody. I don't want to do it by myself. So I never did it. And she said, well, I teach classes and you can come to my house and take classes with me. So that felt very comfortable, but she didn't know that she opened the door for a lifetime career for me with that invitation. I went on through the years. Once I started making art, I was making art every single day. I would attend. She taught two classes on Monday, one in the afternoon and one at night. So I would go to the afternoon class, rush home, get my family all seated, get the meal on the table, get that over with. And then by 7 o'clock, I was back for the night class. So it was from the very first time I picked up the paintbrush that I was absolutely hooked. And I could never thank Donna Boots enough for the life that she opened up for me on that day when she told me that I could come to her house and learn how to paint. As it would happen, I continued painting. Like I said, I started at age 36. And when I was, I guess it was about 42 years old, I had been painting, you know, really every day all these years and was showing my work all over the country and, you know, had work in New York shows and things like that. So I wanted to go on and take the academic path. I wanted to go and work for a degree. So at the age of 42, I walked into Slippery Rock University of Pennsylvania with students all around me that were my children's age. It was a scary first day when I went there, but I did it. And it really turned out to be just a wonderful 4 years at that university. After I was there for a little while, I realized that I wanted to go all the way. And I told my husband one day, I said, I'm going to go all the way with this. He said, what do you mean by that? And I said, oh, I'm going for my MFA degree. Well, he thought I was crazy at the time. But I did. I went then to West Virginia University in 91. I received the MFA from West Virginia. But at the same time, I was also working on an MA degree in English at Slippery Rock University because I really fell in love with poetry. And I just had a passion for poetry, the same as I did for painting. And so I was actually working on both degrees at two different universities in two different states. And I finally finished the MA in English. It took me the whole 6 years to do it. I finished that in 94. And then from there, I ended up at Geneva College teaching English. I was in the humanities department, did the art history lectures in humanities, and taught studio art classes. I was actually in the English department and then did these other things through other channels there at the school. And that's actually because I had the MA in English is really what gave me the cutting edge when I was up for consideration for the position. Had I not gone and had the MA degree, I think it would have been harder for me to find a job in my field. But that really opened the door for me that I could be useful to this Christian college on three different levels. And I loved it because that's what I had prepared myself for. At one point, I was walking across the campus. I had been there 5 years at the time. And I remember you have this little voice in you that sometimes tells you, what are you doing here? And I just remember saying, I've been here 5 years. You know, I was used to really moving around a lot. And I've been there for 5 years. And I thought, this is great. I've been here for 5 years. I love this. So it was a really good experience. I went into writing, I always say by the back door, because the whole time I was working on my BFA, I was taking art history classes. I took far more than what was required. In fact, I took every one that the university offered. And so art history is a tremendous amount of memorization work. And it's also continuous paper writings and research, which I absolutely love. And then when I went on to grad school at West Virginia, I did the same thing there. I took every art history course they taught, even though I was there as a painter and printmaker. So I think that was my entry into writing, but it was academic writing and it was all research based. So I still have that in me. And that's still how I look at a lot of things that way. And I think that's what gives my writing a different quality. So I'm here tonight because Songs for the Pilgrimage has been published. And the one thing I want to say initially about that is that my first book was published when I was working for my tenure at Geneva College, and it was called Concerte Psalms for the Pilgrimage. When that book was finished, I never thought I'd ever write another book. That, you know, just didn't enter my mind I would ever write another book because I wrote that book for that purpose, for my tenure project. But I always had this feeling that I wished I could have done a whole lot more with that book. And so when the opportunity came a couple of years ago, the book was out of print at that time. And I thought, now's my time. So that led me then to re-examine the book, and I had 33 years of writing then to select from to really make that book what I would have wanted it to be back in the early days when it couldn't have existed back then. So that's where we are now with that book being released.
Well, Linda, let's start then at the beginning with your start of the pilgrimage. And we have the first reader is Christina Ender. She is a friend. I believe she's also a writer, and she will do the first section of the book. And then Linda, you can have a couple comments afterward. Christina?
Thank you. First selection is from page 30, Songs for the Pilgrimage by Linda McKinney Lambert. She titled it, May I Serve You? Here are the stacks of paintings for you to look at tonight. I carefully brought them out of storage closets, arranged them here in the kitchen, where my children used to play games around a square oak table. Once, food to nourish the body was prepared here by my hands. Tonight, there's an abundance of food for your soul. Come into my kitchen and taste my world, prepared by my hands. The second of the third is from a journal entry. And this journal entry came from July 8, 1999, Rudig, Austria. We hold up our umbrellas and weep together for joy in the presence of Austria. Have we come home at last? I begin to draw once again, draw for my life, draw to create a memory to stay with me when long winter days try to make me forget summer and Austria. But for now, begin to make a list, things that will be the beginnings of a poem, many poems. We remember today that we have lost our fathers, and the orange fields remind us of our loss. I will return alone after dark and close the rose curtains. The final selection is from page 50 in Songs from the Pilgrimage called Art Underground. I've been working on a plan to put art back into life. The plan includes a gallery, yet when I looked, all I could see was lots of rooms for musicians and a very big stage. I will continue to make my pictures in the basement, Art Underground. Thank you.
Thank you, Christina. Thank you. You read those so well. There's an underlying current there in all of those things of constantly thinking about making art, constantly thinking about drawing. And it's just something that is in the core of an artist, that anything else we're doing, we have this sense that we need to be drawing, we need to be painting, we need to be making art. And then the poem about from the journal entry, I think that was the second year that I took students from Geneva College. I created a program at Geneva College my first year there to take students to Germanic countries and for month-long studies with me. And while we were there, we went to other countries on the weekends as well. So that's really just me writing in my journal about what we were doing, you know. We came back to the room and it had rose curtains and we pulled the rose curtains shut. My writing is usually about place. I'm writing about the place where I am, but then it's always intermingled with other things that overlay and underlie the place. Thanks so much.
Moving on, we have our second reader, who is Andrew Lambert, the son of Linda. He is a high school counselor and a writer. Andrew?
Hello, it's a pleasure to be with you all tonight. I'm going to read two selections from part two, Drawing, Writing, and Dreaming. The first, A Moment of Calm, homage to Max Ernst. A crooked blue sun in a wide sky tumbles through blue, green, yellow, impaled on spiky green stems. Blackbirds squat low, shout at the alligator, resting in the dark corner, watching for more pinks and reds in the middle. A lone dragonfly passes through a painted arch, relaxing, a moment of calm, 2002. The next selection, another dream. Dreaming with my eyes closed, alert to sounds around me, I wonder about the difference, awake or sleep. And how can I know which one is now? Paintings are born when the dreamer reports to work on time, 1997.
Thank you so much. I'm so proud of you. I'm just so thankful for everybody that's come to read a poem or two from my book. I really appreciate you all. What I'm doing in these two poems is I'm looking at paintings. I'm in a gallery and I always carried my sketchbook everywhere I went. I mean, everywhere. And I was always, you know, my pencil or my pen on that sketchbook everywhere I went. Either I was sketching what I was seeing or both writing descriptions and words that would come to my mind. Because to me, writing is the same as painting, putting strokes down on the page, the same as if I'd be putting paint down on a canvas. And so you see that when I'm looking at the work of other artists. I'm talking about the colors I see and what they're doing and the feeling that I'm getting as I stand there looking at the paintings. Thank you.
Thank you. Our third reader is recorded. It is Elsa Barrett, and which is Linda's daughter. And Abby, take it away.
All right, here we go.
Hello, everyone. My name is Ilsa Barry, and I am Linda Lambert's daughter. And I am very happy to be here this evening. Unfortunately, I could not be here in person because of a prior engagement, but I definitely didn't want to miss the opportunity to participate in such a wonderful thing. So I am going to go ahead and begin. I chose three poems from the singing and dancing chapter of part three. The first one I chose is called Canticle. This song begins in silence, a list of words with no voice. Listen for the cadence of a house wren's trembling wings. Begin with a noun. A psalm, put it with a confident symmetrical adjective. Gathering stars are flaming candles, sparkling like red slivers of light, transplanted in sapphire darkness, extolled in psalms. Night music is spiritual, holy prayers for dancing feet. Metrical expressions of praise, poetical compositions. Begin with a verb. Put it with a brilliantly written adverb, flying swiftly through a storm. Hum and chant, stamp your feet, psalming the words, organizing the chaos. Take a chance with sacred texts. Grab some words and sing in non-metrical rhythm. Heed the house wren's beating wings. The second poem I chose is Concert in the Fortress. Red fluted pillars, black ruffles on a swinging skirt, golden metal stars. Flags of red and white, bouquets of flowers and music, arches frame night skies. Stone paths, shields, blazons, singing in chess in the town square. Salzburg in July. The final poem I chose is Folk Dancing. This was my absolute favorite. Toe, toe, heel, hop, tricky little steps. Move it along, swing, swing. Give it your best shot, quicken the pace. Faster, faster, faster. Frantic, hop, step, step, step. Toe, toe, step, toe, toe. Step, toe, step, toe, hop. Crisscross, swirl about, burst forth in laughter. Fall back, trip me up. Trip, glide, move it in squares. Emotions, check your step. Jump and hop, step. Burst forth in laughter and end with a shout. When I was asked to do this, I looked through the songs for the pilgrimage and had to make some decisions on what I would like to read and from what part. And I chose the singing and dancing because growing up, my mother always made sure there was a lot of singing and dancing going on in the house, and a lot of fun was had by all of us marching and singing around the house. So I thought these really spoke to me as to who my mother really is and to my upbringing and some of my favorite memories. I am so glad that I got to participate, even if I couldn't be here in person. Thank you, everybody. Good night.
Thank you, Ilsa. Wow, what can I say? Yeah, we had fun at our house. One of our neighbors is a doctor. She grew up, you know, with her family, grew up with my kids. And she told me not too long ago, she said, oh, I remember being at your house and we would go marching through your house and singing and shouting. We would sing gospel hymns and things like that. Like, you know, Isn't the love of Jesus something wonderful? Things like that. We would go through the house praising God. And I was so tickled that she picked the folk dancing one to do. That, again, when we had our classes in Austria, we had a certain time when we would break. Everybody would have, we had regular classrooms there. We had a school in the village that we used. And so during the break, all kinds of things went on. And one of them was folk dancing classes. Well, I thought that I would get in the back row and sort of learn to do some folk dancing. Oh, let me tell you, it's so grueling. And I ended up just plopping down on the floor with my sketchbook and laughing. But while I'm sitting there, I'm writing down all the instructions for the folk dancing, knowing that I'm going to make that into a poem.
Okay, our fourth reader is one of our own, Wes Sims from Behind Our Eyes.
The poem I'm going to read is entitled Talisman, page 127. Visualize a talisman, precious stones and crystals, woven in bold patterns, plenty of Japanese glass, seed beads, tiny drops of perfect symmetry. I select flawless beads, stab them onto steel needles, hundreds of stitches, thrust them one at a time, upwards into the heavens, endlessly. I plunge my thin needle deep through layers of stiff cloth, make my stitches sure, hold tight. I'm a warrior woman, thumping my spirit drum, made of dappled starlight. I measure timeless days, counting beads in a mystical circle, held together with a bronze toggle clasp. A talisman brings protection from evil, healing for weary spirits, encouragement for aching bodies, courage for new directions. On a pilgrimage over treacherous pathways, guides my dimmed eyes and nervous steps. Black onyx ovals are a vintage fan, unfurled with a flourish, or a sacred victory flag, prepared to cast an invocation. My fingers stroke gold stones, glossy, smooth, polished, faceted, my gift for the king. The second poem I'll read is on page 135, titled After an All-Night Rain. And I chose this because it represents a connection that Linda and I have, namely writing about nature. Also, the rhyme also reminds me of the type of poems I write a lot of. After an all-night rain, remembering Dante, do not forget to mark my passage. Watch as I move through tall grass and honeysuckle vines. Breathe, breathe as you pass through the woods. Feel the air that thickens with heavy rains. Squat low and search for broad plants under sheltering trees. Do not forget to mark my passage. Reach out, mingle the poison ivy vines with the strong scented honeysuckle tangles. Breathe, breathe as you pass through the woods. Trace the withering crimson tips of white flowers on the hardened, muddy knoll. Do not forget to mark my passage. Move your feet quietly this morning, past the sleeping dogs on the hillside. Breathe, breathe as you pass through the woods. Listen as a small dog barks twice in the darkened room where my mother turns in her sleep. Do not forget to mark my passage. Breathe, breathe as you pass through the woods.
Thank you so much. I love these two poems. In the first one, I make talismans. That's what I do. After I lost my sight, I thought I would never be able to make art again. I thought I would never write again. I thought I'd spend the rest of my life sitting in a chair listening to books on cassettes. Then I went to a rehabilitation school for 3 to 4 months in Pittsburgh, and it changed my life. I came out of that school knowing that I can do anything. I can't drive a car, but I can do anything else. I just have to figure out how I will do those things again. The other thing that happened is the eye doctor that I had, the low vision specialist I had when I first went to see him, he asked me to bring in a piece of my art to show him what I was working on. I had just started work on a very complex talisman. I had been to New York City with Ilsa and her family, and it was the weekend after I lost my sight right after this trip. And while I was there, we were in the garment district and I was gathering materials to work on this project that I had in my mind. And then I had started working on it. just had a very small amount of work done on it when I lost my sight. So when the doctor told me to bring in what I do, that's what I brought in to show him what I was working on. And he looked at me and he said, "You will do this again. You will make art again. You won't do it in the way you always did before, but you will do it in a new way." And that's all I needed to hear was the encouragement of somebody telling me that I could do it again. So that combined with going to the Blind and Vision Rehabilitation Services in Pittsburgh, those two things gave me the courage and it gave me the training and gave me the, you know, the heart to go ahead and learn to do things again. And well, for the last 8 years, I've had those works that I have made since I'm blind. I've had those in the Insights show. Carol and I both do the Insights show together, and we both are prize winners, and we both had our work in their calendar, and it's just such a joy to be able to participate like that, and it's a joy to share with Carol that bond that we have of making things, because we're makers. The other thing about that poem that really strikes me is I have a favorite set of Bible verses that I repeat every day or every other day. I mean, the Apostle Paul tells us in Ephesians 6 to put on the armor of God every day. And he goes over the different parts of the body that, you know, metaphorically to put that on every day as a spiritual, just touching with God. So when I make those talismans, that's what I'm thinking about the beauty and the exquisite stones that would be in a royal breastplate. Like that. So that's what's on my mind when I do those.
And
thank
just
you,
as
Wes.
An aside, Linda always beats me.
What?
In the art show. Oh, except for once.
Yeah.
All right. Our fifth reader is, of course, Linda. Linda?
Oh, yeah. I was here with my eyes closed. Everybody, get on the stick, Linda. Here we go. Okay. I'm going to read one poem from the final section of the book. Each section of the book has a topic. Like the topic for this section is called People and Places. And that section, there's some real uncomfortable things there because I've seen a lot of real uncomfortable things in my travels. And I've taught a lot of things from history that are hard. But then as we move toward the conclusion of the book, I put in three poems that I wrote about my mother. And my mother had dementia and she died. She spent the last 6 years of her life in a home. And so I would, like I said, my sketchbook and my tablet with me and writing about things. I like to write about things I'm hearing people say. I write about conversations. The human voice is so wonderful to listen to. And I turn those things I hear into poems in a lot of my work. So I'm going to read you a poem about my mother. This is called A Villanelle for My Mother at 80. I wrote it in 2002. I'm going to be 80 myself in August. So this really touches my heart to look at my life and see how I am right now and then think back of what my mother was going through at my age. So this is A Villanelle for My Mother at 80. My mother has forgotten what day it is. Her children's birthdays have vanished. Strangers moved into her house. She's forgotten about teeth and hair. No longer needs to carry a purse. My mother has forgotten what day it is. Her treasured possessions laid out on tables, put up for sale. Strangers have moved into her house, her drawers emptied of clothing, food removed from her kitchen. My mother has forgotten what day it is. Her long days maneuver slowly between rows of walkers. Strangers have moved into her house. Women watch her face from behind the cards. She does not know how to win. My mother has forgotten what day it is. Strangers have moved into her house. The end.
Very lovely. Is there anything?
I have one more poem I'm going to do. I don't know if you want me to do that now or as a closing, however you want
it. It's up to you. It's up to you whether you want to do it now or at your closing.
Well, I'll just go ahead and do it now then.
That's fine. Go ahead.
Okay. The inspiration for this next poem came from some discoveries about classical music. Physicists claim that any given performance or recording of a classical music piece is a kind of audible hologram, an audible hologram, if you can picture that. The hologram then is projected into our everyday reality by the true musical work itself, because it vibrates eternally in an ethereal medium. It floats in and around us at all times. So after I read that, it was something about people that majored in physics. What I learned in grad school is that physics people always hang out with the art people. I mean, there's just a bond between people that are into physics and people that make art that I would never have suspected. And I do understand that now. And I found that both in working on my master's in English and working on my master's in art. So I thought that was interesting. But anyway, I came across that information about this theory of the fifth dimension and how this music, it never goes away. It's there forever, that we don't see it, but it's there. So that gave me the idea for this poem, and I'll read the poem now. Beethoven's Fifth. Audible holograms remained when Beethoven's Fifth Symphony ended. Classical music inhabits dark matter, exists in fifth-dimensional forms, grown in mundane fields. How can I fathom invisible forces just beyond the well-kept secrets in the cosmos? Lyrical, otherworldly music, independent, never comprehended, outside plausible trajectories. Questions about autonomous reality remain. Space-time, track its position until Beethoven's notes vibrate eternally. Where does such beauty go? Like Zion warriors, it remains hidden. Yes, Beethoven's Fifth lives somewhere, zipped up, fastened tight. The end. That poem won first place in the Magnets and Ladders poetry contest for this year. I was absolutely thrilled and wanted to share that with you. That is not in my book, but it's like the latest big thing that happened to me. So I had to add it to our talk tonight. Thank you.
That is fine. And we would like to open the floor up now for questions for Linda. And I'll have any answer or call on you. Over.
Yeah, you can raise your hand and we will ask you to unmute and then you can ask your question.
Hi, it's Sally.
Hey, Sally.
Linda, I have a question for you. It's a lovely presentation. You talk about being drawn to sketching, to always want to sketch. And you pick up the pencil or whatever and sketch. Do you approach poetry in the same way, or do you find that poetry comes to you?
I do the same thing with poetry. Drawing is about making marks on a page, making marks, mark making. And writing is about mark making to me. That's how I see it. So if you would see me writing a poem, I'm all over the page. I almost never start with an idea of what the poem's going to be called. It's like an architectural site or like a dig that I go on and I'm searching and digging down into places to find what's there and bring to the poem. The poem is a surprise to me. I do not know. Like when I read that article for the poem that I just read, it never entered my mind that that was going to be a poem. But I just couldn't forget that idea that something exists forever, that it's invisible and it can't be seen and it's eternal, like music. So I just was so mesmerized by that. And what I did to write that poem is I laid out an ABCDarian format for it. And then as ideas came to me, I started putting them in the sequence And then I move things all around. You know, when I'm working, I don't just jot something down. And I mean, almost never do I. They're like, my poems are usually very labor intensive because I think about so many things. I guess it's because there's like this chaos that I begin with. That's a good word for it. I begin with chaos, and then I'm a very ordered person. So I must begin to order this chaos. And that's how the poem takes place. And I also see the poem, the same as I do art, a piece of art, as a time capsule. When I say art, I'm also talking about the poem, because to me, they're the same thing. I do not see a difference between them at all in the way I work and in the way I think about them. They are an object on a page.
That's very interesting.
Okay, that's how I do it.
Ready for the next question,
thank
Linda?
You, Sally. Thank you.
Suzanne Cottrell, you can go.
Thank you. First, I wanted to say I have never met Linda personally, but we've been in touch through email, and I've never met a more genuine, generous individual who has helped me on my writing journey. I'm just so great for the friendship. But I wanted to ask Linda what her favorite poetry form is and why.
Thank you, Susanna. I'm so glad you're here. I just feel that you are all such dear friends. And Susanna and I met through a magazine that we both contributed to, and that's how Wes and I met as well. And so it's just wonderful, you know, to have these friendships of people we've never met face to face, but we know so much about each other and we celebrate all kinds of things together, you know, in our conversations. So my favorite form of poetry would be free form. And I like to take, and I learned this from you, Suzanne, I have to say, I looked at her work a lot when I first met her, and I could see things that she was doing in her work that I really liked. She goes in and takes out, and I don't know how you work, but when I'm reading your work, there's not a lot of articles in your work, little short words, just like to and the and things like that. That really resonated with me, and that made my own work much stronger after I started seeing your work. Because we all borrow ideas from each other. We all help each other grow. When we read another person's work, we admire that work. We look for the things that make it work. And if we can apply those things to ourselves in our own work, we do. But, and I met Wes the same way. I read his haikus. I think it was haikus that he wrote, and they just blew me away. They were just so beautiful. So I sent him a note saying how much I like. So that's how I've met so many people. And it's really, really nice to have other friends. But yeah, free form, I like a lot.
Okay. Alice, you can unmute and ask your question. And I think that might be the last question before Marilyn comes on and gives us our closing remark. So Linda, anything you want to say after Alice's question about yourself, about your books, how you would like to share them?
I'll just say.
But right after Alice.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Annie. And Linda, I wanted to ask you to please describe for us the cover of your book. And then also, I so enjoyed listening to your book via my Echo Dot Songs for the Pilgrimage, but I wanted you to let everyone know where your book is available also.
Oh, I'd be glad to share that. My book was edited and designed by DLD Books, and they've done 3 books of my 5. They've done 3 of them, and I love their work. And I just think that the covers they put together are just so beautiful. They work hand in hand with you as the writer to create a book that fits the vision that you have. And so my book, there's a number of poems in my book that I wrote in Venice or I made notes for. I was in Venice every summer, actually. One summer I was there a couple times. But so I have a love for Venice. It's just the beauty of it. When you arrive at the train station and you step down, you're in Venice, you know, when you get off the train, it's almost like you landed in heaven. There's just this beautiful atmosphere and the colors are so nice. So I wanted that for my cover. And what Lenore found for me was a wonderful photograph by a Czech photographer. And that made me happy too, because I always had students in Czech Republic every year. But it's just a picture of, I would say the sun coming up in the early morning, and you see a row of gondolas. They have been parked for the night and they're covered like they always are. And in the background, you see beautiful Venetian buildings. And this picture is so realistic that it looks like it was painted, but it's a photograph. It looks like a photograph of a painting, but it's not. So that's the cover. It's available everywhere books are sold. It's going to be on BARD after the first of the year. They told me that it was just almost ready. That it was actually done. They were going through and, you know, correcting any errors and things like that. So any day I expect it to be on BARD, and I will have three books on BARD then at that point. And of course, Amazon. And it's available in hardcover. It's available on Smashwords, which is wonderful. That's eBooks. All my books are. And yeah, so really any of the booksellers, but Amazon's, most of my checks come from Amazon, put it that way. Any finishing thoughts you want me to say?
Yeah, this is Annie. Do you have any of your books on Audible?
Oh, yes, I do. Yes. Excellent. I have Star Signs is on Audible. And then the first book I wrote after I lost my sight is Walking by Inner Vision, and that is on Audible. So those two, let me think. Do I have another one on Audible? No, I think that's it. Yeah, that's it.
All righty.
I just want to thank everybody for coming out. Thank the readers for answering my call. Would you please do this? And they said yes, and it was just wonderful. And I really enjoyed having you all here. I want to thank you all very much for coming.
Thanks. Thanks to you for all the writing and all the creativity you bring to the world, Linda.
Oh, thank you, Annie.
You're welcome. Carol, do you have any last words? And who is going to close out for the Behind Our Eyes message?
Linda, next year I'm beating you. That's my last.
We'll see about that, Carol.
And Marilyn, would you like to close with something about joining Behind Our Eyes?
Sure. I want to say what a wonderful presentation. Linda, you bring so much when you write about from your literary background, your travels, and your focus on art in your life and what you bring to others. It's just remarkable. And thanks to all the readers. It's unique to have all the family and friendship connections, some new voices we haven't heard before, and that's very welcome. You know, the variety and the connection with the author brings something special to it, I think. And everyone who's here tonight and who will see this book launch program on our website or find it in some other way, we're glad you're here. And we hope you keep up and come to see all of our book launches and authors bringing new books to us. Most everybody here probably knows that Behind Our Eyes is a nonprofit, international. We have some folks in Canada. And our mission or goal or whatever you want to call it has expanded over the last 17 years so much from being just, I don't mean to say just a list, because our list is very creative and very interactive. We have lots of friendships and mentorships that spring up because of our list. But we have grown in so many other ways. We have a magazine, Magnets and Ladders, which Linda mentioned, and that is open not only to members, but to non-members as well. And you can find out about guidelines and all that at magnetsandladders.org. And if you want to join or recommend someone else to join, go to behindoureyes.org and you'll find a link that will take you to a membership form of sorts. But you can also ask questions. If you're not real sure yet, just put on that form that you want more information or whatever. We also have classes and an opportunity to practice reading, all kinds of things that we've grown into from a group of probably less than 20 of us who started it to over 100 now. So give us a look-see, watch our website and see what's coming up. Our calendar is up there, behindoureyes.org. And that's all I have for tonight, but I just have to say thanks to everybody, Carol, Annie, Linda, all the readers, and everyone who's here.
It was a pleasure to be here.
It was a team effort. Thank you all.
Happy National Poetry Month, everyone.
Good night, everyone. We had a wonderful time. Thank you for joining us tonight, everyone. Good night.
Perfect. Very good.